from the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 1st, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Imperial Palace Long.
back, Roaches, back!
Oh, I know, we always have fun on how we're able to score these cheap rooms at the Imperial Palace. This time it was $10 a night, last time it was $7 a night. You know, inflation, the economy's killing everyone, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, hey, we go into this with the mindset that we know we're going to get what we pay for, right? And I got to say, I'm one of these guys that doesn't understand the big palatial suites here in Vegas. If you're coming to Vegas to enjoy a big palatial suite, you're not coming here for the right reasons. And if you're coming here for the right reasons, all you need is just a bed and a shower.
And that's pretty much all we got.
And I gotta say, the bed, fine.
Yeah. Right?
It's not one of these. I'm sure it's not 1,200 thread count on the sheets, and I don't have my firm and soft pillows and all that. But I slept well for the 7 hours this trip that we were able to sleep. But I gotta say, the shower. I think we might have outgrown the Imperial Palace.
Yeah, you know, I think we actually found the shower stall that inspired the Seinfeld episode of the low-flow shower head because, I mean, really, our hair is just ridiculous this trip. I mean, kingdom for any kind of pressure at all. You don't even know if you're rinsed off or not. You get out and you still got this, like, filmy, you know, it's just, oh, my God. Yeah, I think we finally outgrown it, and oh, I think pretty hopefully they're going to knock this place down soon anyway, probably. You never know. So.
Well, it's going to be legendary then because we're obviously recording the show from our suite, and suite is a strong word, but we're trying to make the best of it here. 8118.
Yep.
And as soon as you got here, of course, after we wandered all the way through Tower 1 and realized that we were actually in Tower 2, which really is the same tower, just on the other side of it.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, dead man's hand.
That's right. Aces and ace, baby. Gotta remember the ones are aces. And I said, well, that's a good sign, Scott. It means it's gonna be a good trip or one of us is gonna be dead at the end of it. Either way. But it was pretty good. Walked into our room and right away, we knew we were in quality when we couldn't figure out why the TV wouldn't come on. And so we're like, all right, let me take a look at this. And then I saw some plugs not plugged in. I thought, okay, that's it. So I plugged some plugs in, unplugged some other plugs, and got the TV to turn on, but we couldn't get the cable. And I'm like, something's not right here. So the reason I knew something wasn't right was because we didn't get the forced, hey, you're at the casino and come play all these games and you can also watch adult movies on your TV if you want. So I knew something wasn't right. So I called down there, and I'm like, yeah, we just checked into our room, and sure enough, it's not working on the TV. And the lady's like, did you flip the switch at the door when you first walked in? And I'm like, no. Was I supposed to, like, hop on one leg and chant some sort of theme song to, like, cheers or something? What else was I supposed to do that I didn't know about? She's like, yeah, yeah, you need to turn the switch on at the door to make your television work. I was like, all right, I'm telling you, the TV's on, so I don't know why I would need to do that, but I'm sure you're wrong, lady. Sure enough, though, Scott turns on the switch, and there it is, the cable signal and everything. I'm like, are you kidding me?
The magic begins on our 13-inch television.
You know, but other than that, I have a soft spot for the Imperial Palace, you know, staying here. Reminds me of our first trip out here together when it was cheap, and I don't know. I don't really mind it so much. The elevators that we use this time were better, too.
Yeah, it was going to get faster. And, so. You know, and really, I mean, honestly, you know, if you're going to whine about $10 a night, you shouldn't whine.
Yeah,
so we're
exactly.
Just having fun here. You know, if you're looking just to come here, call up with your Total Rewards card. And who knows? Maybe they'll like you as much as they seem to like us. There's really no reason to like us, either.
Just like it sounds, we're actually not doing the old Skype or the studio thing today. Obviously, we're in the suite, so this show isn't going to be one of our normal shows. But we do have some upcoming shows coming out of this. We're going to have the probably one of our correspondents who was at the TDA, the Tournament Directors Association meeting, and a big meetup here 2 days during the week while we were here. We'll have someone on the show to talk about that. And, of course, Scott got here a couple of days before me, went to Reno and Laughlin. And saw all the rooms up there, had some really good stories from there, too. So I don't want to build it up too much. And then, you know.
And then that'd be boring.
But Scott was there. And then also, you know, one of the things we discovered was being on the show for 6 years and doing the magazine for 3 is that, you know, I've been on here pretty much every year since we started. And I've interviewed pretty much every person that, you know, I could think of that I really want to interview or that anybody might want to hear from, for the most part. I mean, obviously there are people, but it was tough roaming the halls, and I'd see somebody, I'd be like, no, talk to him, no, interview them, no. So I'm like, who am I going to talk to? So we ended up getting two interviews this week. One was a Maria Ho, because she was there for the book signing of that book that I edited, Winning Women in Poker. And then the other one was Hollywood Dave Stan, which some of you may not know him, some of you may. We'll let the interview tell you a little bit about him, but he was a former blackjack player, really like one of the best in the world, actually. And he got tired of getting thrown out of places. He told me a quick story saying he got tired of booking stuff out of the country. They would take his number, they would take his money for the tournament, and he had never been there in his life, never set foot in it or anything. He would fly across the country, pay all that money, and as soon as he stepped in the front door, security would meet him there and say, sorry, you're not allowed on our property, or he wouldn't be allowed in the tournament or whatever. So that was the reason why he converted to poker, and it's going to be a good interview. So those things are coming up pretty soon, but today it's going to be strictly a road trip.
I'm waiting to the day that we walk to a casino and they kick us out.
Yeah, it won't be for my blackjack play. I don't know what it'll be for, but yeah, I'm waiting for that day too.
Oh, of course, as we mentioned on last week's show, our reason for coming out here was to visit as many rooms as we could in Nevada, since we just recently expanded the magazine out here, and we want to put a face to the name and let managers know who we are and actually see the rooms ourselves and make some notes. And we'll be doing a fairly substantial story in our September issue.
Yeah, correct? That is correct.
So last week I was thinking, you know, hey, we're going to go through all this effort. We're going to drive to all these. I spent all this time mapping out everything we go. I'm MapQuest's new Five Diamond member club. And I'm like, you know, it might be fun if we actually have a challenge.
Yeah.
And really, to be honest, Chris, behind that idea was just a little extra motivation. Because I knew we were going to get out here, we were going to get a little tired, we were going to get a little frustrated of going from place to place, and then we might just skip a couple. You know, skip those ones that we probably don't need to go to, we're probably never going to be in the magazine, but they could be, but, you know, it's just easier for us to skip if we don't have mommy and daddy here to make sure that we don't cut corners, right?
Right.
So in this case, mommy and daddy became the Andy Up Nation. Because I threw down a challenge, and I'm like, all right, guys, guess how many of these rooms we can hit. And it ended up making us kind of stay on task, even though towards the end of the day we were seeing Martians and Luigi's and Mario's walking around and stuff like that, because we were so bleary-eyed.
Whoever wins at the contest, and we'll announce that later, but whoever wins, they owe it to Scott. Okay, because I was like, yeah, we really don't need to go there. And he's like, no, we gotta go. Scott, we really don't need to see this one, man. I could just, you know, I know, no, we gotta see this one. So if it was up to me, we would have saw it like 12 rooms. And for not to be a spoiler, but if you guess 12, you guess wrong. Okay. So we hit a lot of rooms. So
yeah, we'll check the Facebook and Twitter feeds when we get back. To be honest, though, Chris, I think I can't imagine anybody actually guessed correctly.
Yeah, no.
And no offense to our nation out there, but they did not believe in us, Chris.
You would think after all this time they would have some faith. Somebody who doesn't miss a show in 6 years would have some sort of stick-to-itiveness to try to see as many of these rooms as possible, but no.
And I was watching some of the guests when they're coming in, and I was like, 20? Really?
Really?
You have no more faith in us than 20? I mean, I could get drunk and stumble down the strip and hit 20 rooms.
Not you could. You have. On this trip. You have done that, actually. So, yeah, 20 guesses, not very good.
So it was more motivation, it was more fuel in the belly for us. And a few folks out there that were wondering how many we hit, it was 76.
Yeah.
And I figured it was just about 150 hours we were here. So that is one poker room for every 2 hours we're out here.
No sleep, no nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
No eating, no funny stories, none of that. We had packed all that in around all that. 76 rooms. We actually managed to play in 7, which is actually more than I thought.
Yeah, I thought maybe 4 or 5, maybe one for each day or something.
Yeah.
We ended up playing in 7 rooms total, so it kind of works out that way because you were here 7 days. So.
Yeah, that's true. So technically it was one for every day.
But if you take out the naps, the driving, the eating, it's really like one room for every 6 minutes. I mean, it was crazy how many times we were in a room. And you wait, I just it all started to blend together, and it was great that you got to see every room, and you got to, you know, and we, good thing we took notes, though, because it all blended together toward the end of the week. It was just, I don't know if it was heat frustration or whatever you want to call it, but...
That's a dry heat. It was only 112. Christian Winding.
Oh, man, that's all. Did you see Scott grabbing the steering wheel after we had couldn't find an inside parking garage? He's like, ow, ooh, ow, and then he would say, I love it out here. Ow, ooh, ow. Oh, yeah, yeah, you love burning your fingertips on the steering wheel every 5 minutes, Scott. But it was great. We had a lot of fun, and we had some really interesting stops, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a lot of rooms already, so, I mean, at least here in Vegas. I mean, the Reno was brand new for me, and that's a whole other show. But it's funny how many times we've been out here and how many of these rooms we haven't been to. And, you know, of course, there wasn't really, I guess, technically no reason to go to these other rooms before. I mean, when you come out here to tours, you end up staying on the Strip or downtown or somewhere near here. But certainly there's a lot of great rooms, locals rooms that circle here, which I kind of heard of, but I just, you know, like I said, there was no reason to hop in the car and drive. I didn't think there was any reason to hop in the car and drive 20 minutes, and I was wrong.
Yeah, no, definitely wrong. I mean, some of these places were really, really nice. And some of the games that they offer that, you know, you hear about the Northeast having some mixed games, and you hear about California being the, you know, the Mecca or whatever, but... Some of the games that they have here, the original to get people here, are just incredible. And my favorite, absolute favorite of the whole trip, was at the Suncoast.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Suncoast Casino had a 2-10 spread stud 8 game with a double qualifier. First of all, I never even heard of that. Maybe that's just my own, you know, ignorance or not playing enough. But apparently the double qualifier means that if you don't have at least two pair, you can't win the high. And you have to have, of course, the stud 8 for the low, the 8 qualifier. So, and if no one has that at the end of the hand, and whoever's remaining in the hand when it's over would split the pot.
Yeah.
And so that's like a backup insurance policy. Scott pointed that out pretty quickly when we were on the show, when we were on the road, I mean. So I was pretty impressed with that. So you could tell he was sober when he came up with that idea. But it was really cool, and I really wanted to play it. But I think it was a Monday night, and we'll check our notes.
But they had stud going all the time. They had a stud game going on. So, you know, it was interesting that that's like a... We keep talking about how stud is dying. You can't find anywhere. You can't even find Atlantic City other than one or two casinos. And then you come out here, here's a casino that's almost all stud.
Yeah.
I let just have him walk in here. Oh, you're playing No Limit Hold'em. That game's been dead for years here, son.
Oh, man. And it was a nice room,
too. It was
too.
Very nice room. You know what I mean? Very nice property.
A lot of the properties were really nice. And sometimes you don't really know what you're going to get into. And you get in there, and it's a nice surprise. A lot of the rooms. I know that Club Fortune, which doesn't even open until 5 o'clock at night, which is such a shame. Even the same with the Silverton.
And Silverton,
you know, two really nice-looking rooms aesthetically, and they had all the bells and whistles, you know, the automatic shufflers, the Bravo, whatever, nice, you know, the wooden rail or the marble rail or stuff like that. Not the rail, but like the racetrack, whatever they call it for the chips. And they were nice rooms, and they weren't even open until 5 o'clock, and it's such a shame. And some of them you would think, you know, it's a poker room. It's a poker town, man. But they weren't. And, you know, if you were here, I think that you'd want to play in those places or not mind playing in them because they were nice. It's like you were in a nice place, a nice little card room. So those are cool. We had some really nice stops. The Station's casinos were really nice.
Yeah.
You know, and they're locals joints, too. And sometimes I get the impression when you think of a locals joint,
Probably the wrong word.
Yeah, you think of it as, you know, okay, everybody goes there every single day, so you're not trying to impress anyone. And eventually the upkeep kind of goes downkeep, you know, they're not exactly, but not these places, they are top notch, and they're really, really nice, Red Rock and Green Valley, Santa Fe, I mean, you just name them, they're all sweet rooms, we were real impressed with them.
Yeah, yeah, and particularly, it's another, we talked about on the Atlantic City road trip, about how the four Caesars properties in Atlantic City are working together to kind of boost their overall power in the market, and Stations to some degree is doing that as well, too, they, you know, they got the Jumbo Bad Beat. But they're also working on some tournaments and things like that. So that's great because, you know, you come here and you've got, like, you know, you got a gajillion Caesars rooms here, too.
Yeah.
And they work together. I thought it was interesting they worked together on the World Series. You know, you never think about all the staff that's required here for the World Series.
Right.
And when we called ahead to find out where managers were going to be, almost all the Caesars managers told us to meet us at the Rio because they were working shifts there.
That's right.
And a couple of them said they loved it. It was a little break from the monotony of working in their own room. But Stations actually has a corporate director of poker, which we learned.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's really cool. One guy oversees all the casinos, and he makes sure that they're all on board. Sort of like a poker czar for Stations casinos. And we just learned that on this trip, too. So learning a lot of good stuff. And it's nice to see them working together. you know, it's been in this town, you probably have to.
Absolutely.
And that's something they're good at. They work together, and they're even advertising our magazine that way with a jumbo promotion for $10,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can see that they're really pooling their resources, and it's a good thing.
Well, I think the other interesting thing I want to bring up, and we'll talk about this on the Reno show, too, because I started the trip in Reno, and I visited, I believe, 15 rooms there. A couple of them were in Lake Tahoe and Carson City. So we're really about 10 there. And a lot of the managers there said, you know, we just have too many rooms here.
Yeah.
We got too many. There's rooms. There's like 3 or 4 rooms with 4 tables, no games. Do we really need those in the market? You know, we've got some other ones that are better.
Yeah.
And I wondered about the same thing here in Vegas. And, you know, I was telling some people this, and there are 2 schools of thought on this, because we're always famous for telling people, you know, if, you know, the casino doesn't have a poker room, that means they're not going to get my business, and they're not going to get my wife's business.
Yeah.
You know, my wife doesn't play poker, but if I'm traveling somewhere, let's say it's Whoville, and I got 2 casinos to choose from, and one has a poker room and one doesn't, I'm going to stay at the one that has the poker room, and my wife is going to stay there and play the slots and make sure that Whoville is better for the next time we're going to get there,
yeah.
Even though my poker play probably isn't helping them too much. So I always think it's important that these rooms have a poker room or a poker product for that reason. But then I start to wonder, you know, wow, I mean, it was like 54 rooms, I think, we hear here in Vegas, and we only missed a couple, if that. Is that too many?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a point where it's just diminishing returns, where some places just don't need them?
Yeah, it's a tough question, because even just being in Atlantic City, you know, in those few rooms that were there, everyone there was telling us the same story about, you know, it just spread too thinly in some places. And I think that here it's tough, you know. I mean, it depends on where you're staying and whatever. But, yeah, it does seem like if you took out just a few rooms, you know, just a few rooms, everybody would be busy, you know. And I agree. It's hard to believe that there's that many rooms in such a short drive from end to end. And it's pretty incredible. And you can tell, too, that some rooms would definitely benefit from the room next door closing down or something of that nature. And you're right. You're absolutely right. I think it might be too many rooms in Vegas right now.
Well, I think an interesting thing, too, I was thinking about, and I'm not trying to shut any room down here by any means, but we finished the trip yesterday on the North Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Sahara was doing great poker business there. They closed. The manager and most of the dealers moved to the Stratosphere, which is across the street, and they actually brought the whole tournaments.
Yeah,
that they were doing well. I mean, Las Vegas Michael told us about that a couple weeks ago. And then right north of that, you got the Riviera, brand new manager. She's real excited, trying to do new things. She actually copied the tournament structure, too, and claims to have made it even better
right, by
tweaking some things. And then across the street, you got Circus Circus, which probably gives a couple games, too. And I was just thinking when I was walking through there, and I'm like, competition is great because it's probably helping those players, particularly the tournaments there. But, you know, if that's just one room, 2 of those rooms closed, you've got one really action-packed room,
yeah,
and then action is really what you want in a poker room.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd have a monopoly. And I'm wondering that, too. I wonder if any of those rooms are going to close down or not survive. It just seems like they're picking them off one by one over there. And, yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, that's the other thing, too, is, you know, you'd have all that business down there. You'd thrive. And then on the other end, same way, you know. It's hard to imagine not having competition though,
right.
And everyone's going to be like, we need to have something there so we can compete against. So it's like,
yeah.
It's just like we saw a Walgreens at Venetian.
Yeah.
So we knew there should be like a CVS across the street, you know, and whatever the casino was across there at the time, a TI or something. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe eliminating a couple of rooms is good, but you always have that one next to another so that you have some competition.
Well, I thought about that, too, because I think, like, the second night we played, we kind of split up. You went your way, I went my way, and I ended up walking to, like, 6 casinos. And I knew they're probably all going to have the same thing, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go and see. Maybe I'll be surprised. And I wasn't.
You weren't, yeah.
But then I wondered, you know, hey, I just spent an hour trying to find a game, and I should have just went to the first place I wanted to go to anyhow, because,
yeah.
I mean, is the 1-2 really different here versus there, or the 2-4 different here versus there? And every once in a while, a room might have something different. Obviously, you got some aesthetics. I mean, some rooms are louder, and, you know, every room does something a little different, so I guess it's not the same game, but just seemed like it'd be nice to cut down my walking.
I don't know, the last time I came, and even the last time we were together, when I walked, I got rewarded, you know. I found like a 3-6 horse game somewhere, and it was really cool. And this time, really, the only mixed game we saw the whole time was at the Venetian, and you went there a few times.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, but later on you'll find out why I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have. And then, so what I did is I always end up, when we stay at the IP, I check the IP game out. If there's something that I don't want going on there, then I go down to like Harrah's and there's nothing going on there. I end up getting lazy and I just stop at the Mirage. Yeah. And, you know, you love to play at the Mirage, and actually they're struggling a little bit lately. So I was really happy to play there, and but they didn't have any mixed games going, which they did that last time I did, so that was kind of cool. So now, yeah, you're right. It's like, all right, I played 1-2 No Limit at the Mirage, but I could have just, you know, fallen out of my sweet bed here and landed in the same kind of game downstairs, so why did I go that way? But you never know. You want to be surprised. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's not bad to get out and walk around, but you know, when we talk to these rooms, I mean, people are probably going, geez, how do they do 70s every 2 hours? They probably just walked in and walked out.
Yeah,
you're right, for most of us. But for a lot of them, we actually, I mean, the goal was to actually talk to the manager and learn a little bit more about the room when we could, and in some of these places, I mean, at least I know a couple of them I stopped in. I was there for like 2 hours, and when you were here, I think we had a couple that were at least an hour each. So,
yeah.
We spent quite a bit, too. If you took those out of the equation, then it was kind of crazy. But we asked them a couple questions. You know, we always asked them, what's unique about the room? And, you know, out of the 76, 75 said they're dealers.
Friendly.
Yeah, friendly. but no, really. A lot of them had interesting things to say. And then, of course, you know, obviously we're there to find out how the magazine's being received. And very excited that it's being received so well out here. So then we ask, you know, hey, are we sending you too many? Not enough? And they're like, and most of them were like, yeah, that's about right. And if not, we, you know, we took a couple notes. But my favorite stop was the Flamingo, right next to the Imperial Palace here. Mike Bickford, great manager there, and a lot of fun to talk to. They even mentioned they had this huge high-level game that showed up.
I forgot about that.
Amazing that they just wanted to get away from all the eyeballs, so they came to the Flamingo. I guess that's...
Yeah, they're like, don't tell anybody. They tip like everyone, you know, just keep it quiet, keep people away from us. And they had this huge, huge game. Keto Fam was one of the ones that was leading the charge, and... Can you imagine just, like, stumbling into the Flamingo on the strip and then looking over and seeing, like, a
200, 400 game?
Yeah, like a couple hundred grand on the table. Yeah. That's crazy.
But, of course, we asked him, hey, are we sending you enough? And he's like, you know what? I don't know. They're gone, so I guess that's good. But so maybe you need to send more. But, you know, hey, you know, the thing we have a problem with here on the strip, particularly in our room because it's, like, right by the door, is the homeless guys. Walk in here, and they just take a big handful of them, and they'll walk down the strip and try to sell them for like a dollar.
That is the coolest story I think I've ever heard. And I want to know if there's anyone out there who actually bought a copy of Annie Up for a buck. I would love to know that. I mean, we got single sales copies, you know, if you want to get them online, but to buy them from a bum for a dollar when there's no price on the cover of the magazine, that's pretty something. You know, maybe they just felt bad for the bum and they gave him a buck anyway. But to know you purchased a copy, now we can put that on our resume.
Well, I'll tell you here, you know me, I'm always thinking of new ways to build Annie up and bring revenue in. And boy, talk about 18 light bulbs going off my head. Last night I was walking back and I'm seeing the little smut peddlers out there, you know, snapping their hands and giving you the little things with the stars and the boobies and things. And I'm like, you know what? Hey, we need to get these guys out handing out Annie Ups to people.
That's right. Put them to work, man.
Yeah.
We are the official magazine of the homeless in Las Vegas.
I will not be happy. I will not be satisfied until I come to Las Vegas and see our magazine strewn across the strip. People walking on it and picking it up and throwing it down. That will be the highlight of our
Oh my god. You know, I can just see now me and you with our publisher's photos and like little stars over our nipples. You know. But of course, we did play, as Scott mentioned, we played in 7 rooms, the equivalent of 1 a day, because Scott was here 7 days. And we had a couple of stories. And you know what I think, too, Scott, is we need to probably have on your Laughlin show, which is, I think, going to be next week, just a little space that says, things we forgot about Vegas. Because I have a feeling that, you know, Scott stumbled in at like 4 a.m. And according to local time, it's like 9:20 right now. So he may have forgotten some stuff. I know that I just got out of the shower and he's like, all right, let's start. And I'm like, give me some time to think about it, you know. So there may be some stuff that we might remember. And maybe not. Maybe we did remember it all. Who knows? But just remember that next week that we might have that little segment on there as well just to catch you up. But we did play. And
you played.
Yeah.
I contributed to the poker economy, as I have been recently. But, you know, I worry about our magazine sometimes, Chris, that I'm a publisher of the poker magazine, and I make my money
at the blackjack table in Atlantic City and the craps table in Las Vegas.
Well, I'm worried too because that might mean that we're going to lose the company. This is my degenerate partner here.
I mean, you hear all these stories, you know, Phil Ivey, DJ Clooney, these are the guys that they play poker to fuel their craps and blackjack obsessions. I am the opposite. I have to play blackjack and craps to fuel my poker obsession. There's something deeply, deeply wrong about that.
Annie Up, your degenerate magazine. That's what we're going to call it from now on.
First night was at the Venetian. I love playing the Venetian because I always know I'm going to get a game I like there. I think it was like 4-8 horse that night. Yeah. I also played some 4-8 Omaha. I love going over there. Nice room to take good care of you. And I lost two racks the first night. I'm like, oh, man. And I'm stumbling home. And I walked by the Casino Royale, Chris. Home with 100x odds on craps. And actually, they changed a little bit. It was only like 20 times odds. But still phenomenal. I mean, you're not going to see me backing up my $3 bet with 60.
Right.
Ever. But I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to play a little craps. And I got unstuck. I had a major roll. It went on forever. I totally got the little don't pass guy all upset. And I cashed out, colored in, and they gave me, Chris, a pink chip.
Oh, yeah.
A 500 pink chip. I was telling people at the meetup, I think I was halfway to buying the Casino Royale. That's how rich I felt, carrying a pink chip through the casino.
I know, and it's funny because it's almost the exact same thing happened on the Atlantic City trip.
Yeah.
Scott got stuck a bunch, and he goes and plays blackjack, and wins pretty much every dime back. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so sad. This is so sad. You're never allowed to write a strategy magazine for a strategy column for the magazine ever again. He brought up the Venetian and that 4-8 horse game, and we had a lot of fun. And I actually won a bunch of pots, and I was like, "Well, this is great. I'm really a pretty decent horse player, you know." And we got to study rotation, my favorite game, and I thought, "Well, this is fantastic. You know, I'm up already. And now we get to get into my favorite game." And some of the players here, you could tell, just didn't really know how to play all the games. So I thought this is going to be my edge. And I got rolled up fours and rolled up nines in the same rotation. I have like, they did rotation of eight hands, I think it was. Yeah. But in six hands, I got those rolled up. So I was like, oh my God, this is great. And I pumped it every single street with the rolled up fours. And a guy backed into Broadway and I never boated. And he thought I was going low. I lost like $120 on that one hand. And then like two hands later, I'm like, all right, here's my chance to get my money back. Rolled up nines. And I with a nine, you know, I probably should have disguised it a little more, but there was two people in the hand already, and I didn't want to. So I completed the bet. They all folded.
Yeah.
I rolled up fours, lost 120, rolled up nines, and won the Annies. I was negative, like, 108 or 110 or 112 or whatever with two rolled up hands, and that was just so brutal. So I ended up actually losing a rack and a half at that, played a little no limit hold'em, won about 80 of it back. So I lost a rack that first night too. Real frustrating.
Yeah.
But I loved the Venetian. I loved playing there. We had a lot of fun, and it's so amazing to see that many cash games going on around.
Oh yeah. I mean, even last night I got there. I don't know, 2 a.m. it seemed like, and they had the board. You had to watch the board for like 10 minutes for them to go through all the different types of games they had, and then each a lot of the games they had multiple tables for. It was just amazing how many people were there.
Yeah.
On a night. I mean, it's just that room is just so busy with so much variety.
Also, I didn't tell you this, but you know, a couple times when you're walking through the room and you're playing in these cash games, you're playing with some of the biggest pros in the world right next to you. It's kind of weird. But playing, I think it was either 2-5 or 1-3. I wasn't sure, but it was no limit. Next to me was the guy Timoshenko or whatever he was. He's a World Poker Tour champion. And he's playing like 2-5 or something.
Yeah, it was having
like,
fun.
Yeah, that was so cool. He was having a blast. He had like his girlfriend there and everything. So that was kind of cool. Just the Venetian is just where a lot of people show up there to you know, to get the good action, and we were a part of it. Yeah. But after that night, I never went back because I knew I could kill the other games locally. So I was like, why am I going to go there and really challenge myself against the best tonight when I want to try to enjoy this trip? So I didn't go back, but you did. You're a glutton for punishment.
Well, I just wanted to play a little variety. I mean, I got broken up. At one point, I'm like, you know what? All right. I actually decided I didn't want to play Omaha or horse again, which is so weird because I can't get that at home, and I should want to play it all the time here. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to play a little No Limit tonight. Wandered around aimlessly forever, trying to find a game that I liked, and finally just gave up and went to Harrah's. And I had a tournament starting, and I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll get a tournament. That's what I really wanted to do. And they're like, yeah, we'll probably get two tables. And I'm like, how much to pay? And it's like top three. And I'm like, you know, I just don't like those 20-player tables, three spots. Yeah, I mean, I'd rather just make a two sit-and-goes. And, you know, I'm not trying to make a big score here. So I'm like, all right, give me a, do you have a 1-3 seed? Yeah, absolutely. I grab my chips, I sit down, I'm unracking, I look up, and straight across from me, Chris Cosenza.
You didn't even know. You're there for like 5 minutes. I'm like staring at you. And that was brings up another story, too. The guy sitting next to Scott was one of our listeners, newer listener from California, L.A. area. And I'm talking to a guy on my right who was a German kid, came straight from Germany for the World Series. And he was getting in my way. He kept leaning on the table right in front of me. So finally I said to him, hey, man, are you going to sit there like that all night or do I have to move? And when I said that, the guy sitting next to Scott, before Scott was there, looked at me. And then he's like, hey, are you Chris? And I said, yeah. He goes, I recognize your voice. And that's like the third or fourth time on this trip, or in my life, but second time on this trip that people recognize us for our voice. And I think someone else said that about you, too. It's pretty cool, you know, just listening to the show, because a lot of times I don't, you know, see the magazine or whatever. And, yeah, that was a good night. That was a fun night. We had a lot of fun. And I was up a bunch when you got there, so I was like, all right, Scott's here. I'm leaving. And I got up and took my profit.
And I should have left with you. But, yeah, I mean, it helped a little bit that you you had the can with you, that you,
yeah,
you talked to.
Talk into.
Yeah, because if you just talked normally, no one would really understand it. I've got a little poker issue here to bring up. I always like, the best part of coming to these things is sitting there and just paying attention to what's going on. And I'm always thinking about material for the show, so I'm always trying to pay attention to stuff and thinking about whether I can bring it up. And we had a very interesting thing at the Venetian the first night I was there. We had a gentleman there who was very talkative, very active. I think he played for a little bit right before we both got moved to the Must Move. And he's a dealer at the World Series. And I think this is funny, too. I'm not picking on dealers at all, but it's just the way things work. I mean, these dealers come from all over. They have like 1,000, I think, just at the World Series, not counting all the other tournament series. So, yeah, a lot of folks in here for the day. And they work for 8 hours, and they're not allowed to really talk.
Yeah.
You know, they got to keep the game going and running. And so when they get off the clock, they become jabberwockies. They just keep jabbering all the time. And this guy was one of them. And nice guy. But at one point, he just drove the guy next to him crazy. He's like, can you just shut up? He's like, is what I'm talking about? No, I don't care what you're talking about. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Just calm down. Take a breath.
Yeah.
Can I buy you a beer? And so then the guy started dropping some salty language, right? And so the dealer said something. It's like, all right. She was being really nice to him. It's like, you know, hey, yeah, just don't say it again, all right? It's just not allowed. And he's like, well, what's not allowed here? And she's like, that word. She's like, just that word? What about this?
Oh, my God.
And so we determined in this vulgar display here that the Venetian has two words you're not allowed to say. The F word and the word that the this dealer who's from Great Britain referred to as see you next Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
Which he says, everybody says there in Great Britain. Even the women say it. That's just what they do. And so those are the only two words. So eventually the dealer had to call the floor over because the guy just was getting belligerent about this. Yeah. And so he started, hey, can I say the S word? But he didn't say the S word.
He said it, yeah.
And the floor's like, yes, you can say, well, I don't understand. Why is that word different than this word? So, I don't know. Is there a difference between the words?
No. There isn't a difference. Just because someone takes more offense. They don't in Great Britain, so now you got to know, you know, regionalize your language and stuff. I think either you can swear at the table or you can't. So, I don't know.
All right,
know,
so you're on Team Dealer here for that part of the argument.
Yeah, I mean, for that part, if you're going to say that you can swear, then what's the difference? Because there's a degree of swearing, you know, you have a meter up at the table, know, and it is kind of odd, it's kind of weird, but I've got to tell you this. I ran into this guy at the World Series, and he recognized me right away. Yeah, his name was Max.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he started talking to me and told me a little bit about that, too. And he's like, and it was weird because I didn't really, his accent wasn't really that thick.
No, you know? he grew up in L.A.
Yeah, so he lives over there now. Yeah. So I couldn't really, when he said that to me, I was like, are you kidding? So, and he actually brought a little bit of that, and he thought it was kind of funny. And I think that he was just being funny, though.
He was just trying to get he admitted at the table he was just trying to get this guy on tilt.
Yeah,
and then the guy stacked his chips up and ran away. And he's like, hey, I didn't mean to run the guy off. I was just trying to get him on tilt. But, you know, he brought up a couple other issues, too. I mean, obviously, he's British. He grew up here in America. But he turned this all into an American thing, Chris. All right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting there, I'm like, hey, you can't pick on America. Only we can pick on America. That was like an Animal House with the pledges there. But he was sort of going off on this, hey, it's America, and you guys care more about the right to bear arms than the freedom of speech. And he started turning this into a freedom of speech thing. And I think everybody at the table, whether they were, like, saying it or not, was like, dude, it's not a freedom of speech thing. It's a policy thing.
Yeah.
It's not like every poker room in the United States won't let you say the F word. It's the Venetian has decided that these two words are not appropriate for the room. And if you don't like that, you can rack your chips up. And guess what? There are 55 other poker rooms in the city. We went to them all. We know they exist. You can keep walking until you find one that lets you say whatever you want. So it wasn't an American thing. I was actually getting a little upset about that.
Well, you know what, though? America has the same policy. You don't like our bear in arms thing? You can leave. You can go back to Great Britain and be an expatriate. So whatever you want to do is fine by me. And it's funny because you brought up that he actually ticked this guy off enough to make him leave. I had the same kind of experience at the Mirage. Yeah. There was a drunk guy there. And it's funny. I waited for my table. Then finally two tables open up and they said, you can have your pick. You can go to table 18 or table 19.
I never like when they give me a choice.
Yeah, and I never picked correctly. I looked at table 19, and they're like, I was going to sit down with $200, and there were like six guys there with $1,500 or more.
Right, yeah.
And then I looked over at table 18, and there was no one there with more than like $400, and then there was a drunk guy, and I said, I'm going to sit here. So I sit down, and literally...
By the way, that drunk guy was not me.
Yeah,
just in case anybody was wondering.
Although he had the same hair as you.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he actually did. Hmm. A little bit longer. But so this guy, as soon as I sit down, there's a guy in the one seat, and this drunk is in, like, the four seat, and they're bickering at each other. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great, you know? And the guy in the one seat, he's the kind of guy that knows just enough about poker and just enough sayings about poker to get himself into trouble, but to make him, as soon as he opens his mouth, you know he's an idiot, even though he's telling you all these things that are factual. It's kind of like, just because I can tell you that there's clouds in the sky doesn't make me a meteorologist. You know what I mean? So this guy
what
is
What do you really need to be a meteorologist? You just need a cool name, Skip
Stormy
Huffington.
Stormy Weather. Yeah. But this guy just would not let it go because a drunk had beaten him out of a pot, and so he kept saying, keep playing that way, sir. I will have all of your chips, sir. Yes, yes, sir. I had the best hand going in, sir. And he kept, and he was just rubbing it in on this guy. And everyone at the table was looking at each other saying, all right, who's going to be the one that just grabs this guy by the neck and take him over and say, look, you don't tap on the aquarium when you have a fish at the table. Just say, nice hand, sir, and take his money without telling him you're going to take his money. But he wouldn't let it go, hand after hand after hand. So finally, the guy, now this guy was, he was rich. You just knew he was rich. You could tell by the way he dressed, the clothes he had, the jewelry, the money he had. And he says to the guy, this is the drunk guy now, the drunk guy says to the other guy, he's like, I'm going to bust you, sir. I'm going to bust you because I was just being fun with you, and now, now you're really getting on my nerves, so I'm going to bust you. So we're laughing. The guy pulls out a $1,000 chip out of his pocket, okay? And the chip runner comes over, a lady grabs it, and she says, well, I've never seen one of these before. And so, I mean, literally, she's a chip runner in a poker room. She's never seen a $1,000 chip before, so that's saying something. So he goes and he gets like $300, and then they give him back the rest in $100 bills. The very next hand, the guy, the idiot raises, the drunk calls, and he says, I think this is going to be the hand I bust you. So everyone else folds because we want to see what happens here, and no one else has a hand. So the flop comes 2-3-4, and the drunk bets a little, and the idiot goes all in for like $600. Okay, so the other guy only has $300 in front of him. He calls.
Oh wow!
The idiot turns over ace ace. The drunk turns over 6-6. Jack and a turn, 5 on the river. The drunk wins, and everybody at the table congratulated the drunk. We did everything we could to make this guy happy. He was just hilarious. So then his wife walks by, and he's like, all right, guys, I gotta go have dinner. We're like, oh, no, no. He's like, oh, no, I'm gonna leave my chips here, but I'm gonna have a bite to eat, and I'll be back. So we're thinking, oh, this guy's not coming back. Sure enough, 20 minutes later, he comes back. He's totally drunk, though, and now he's so drunk that he's falling asleep. He's doing one of those, I'm exhausted, and he's putting his head inside of his hands, and we have to keep nudging him every hand, and it's his turn to act. And I started having flashbacks, Scott, of our last trip together when we were at the Monte Carlo, and we had that older Mexican gentleman who just didn't speak any English, but he kept pulling $100 bills out of his wallet, and he was into the game for like $1,700, and the only pot he won was against me. And I was so mad, and I started thinking, I'm not going to be able to take advantage of this drunk. Here we go. So sure enough, I get pocket eights. The guy has ace king. He was straddling for like 12 on a 1-2 game. So he straddled on this hand, and I have pocket eights, and he was doing the old, you know, if I straddle, I'm going to raise or whatever. So I limped with eights. He raises. I re-raise with eights. He calls. Flop comes all unders. I bet. He calls. Next turn's an under the eight. I bet. He calls. The river is an ace. I check. He bets. I call, and he has ace king. You know. So I'm like, I knew it. I'm gonna lose this guy. But luckily, a few hands later, I went on a major rush, and I had like 6-5, and he had like an overpair, and I flopped an open-ended straight draw. He bet. I called. Hit it. He shoved for no reason. And I called. So I made some money on him. I ended up actually making a lot of money at that table that night because of him. But I just can't believe that there are still people out there. This guy knew everything about poker. He didn't know the cardinal rule is to not piss off the drunk who's going to keep giving you money if you just play him properly. So, you know, the guy at your table who was trying to get rid of somebody, but I don't know if he's a good player. If he's a good player, you want to get rid of him because you don't want him to take your money. But in this case, I couldn't believe it. You know, another story from the Mirage. And it's the same exact table too. Actually, I forgot to tell you that when I had that, I had that horse. It was the exact same table, just a different game. So we had a lot of fun there, and I was glad that guy was there because I got unstuck that night.
Well, certainly one of the highlights of all of our trips have been the meetups.
Yeah,
and we did that last night at the Palms, and I got to mention Joe.
Viator,
yeah. The poker manager there, went out of his way, rolled out the red carpet for us. We were talking on the way over, like, you know, hey, because a bunch of people were coming up to us asking us about it, and we were telling some people about it to show up. So we really had no idea whether 10 people were going to show up or 100 people.
Yeah.
So we show up at the Palms about 2 hours before it, and they've got 6 tables all going.
Packed.
And we're like, this could be a problem.
I thought Scott, I'm like, all right, where are the crappy rooms that are dead that we can go to with these people if we have to? We're trying to imagine the trip and all the ones that didn't have any action at all going, so we're really starting to get worried.
So we meet Joe, and he's like, so how many people do we have? And you're like, Joe, I really wish we knew. It's going to be somewhere between 10 and 100. I'm guessing around 20. He's like, all right, well, we'll be able to clear out a couple tables here when the aces cracked promotion ends. People are going to bolt like they always do.
Yeah.
But I just happen to have a tournament area set up for tomorrow's satellite, but I need to get the gaming gaming executive to...
Yeah, the commission or whatever.
...approve us to use it tonight for your event. It's like, I got to call in. I don't think it's going to be a problem, but we'll let you know. And if not, we'll make it work. We'll do alternates or whatever. So, you know, we go to the buffet, and I don't know whether you were a little stressy, but I know I was. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have a bunch of people show up. There's going to be no tables.
Yeah.
Gaming's not going to get an approval, and then we're going to have to figure it out. So you have to call, hey, it's been approved. And I'm like, that's great. And he's like, I want you to know, too, Scott, that my boss says that the fastest he's ever gotten emergency gaming approval in his career is 24 hours. He got it done in 32 minutes tonight for your group.
32 minutes. Much respect for the Antioch Nation there. They said, oh, we got these two big shots in town. We got to make sure that this happens. It's a real coup for us to have them here. We can't blow this opportunity. You know, he greased a few palms, you know, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
And we got ourselves the Key West room.
Yep.
Which was, we found out later, was the room that they hosted a celebrity poker showdown in.
Yeah.
Which was really cool.
I had no idea. We played the whole tournament, had a great time with everybody there, and then, I think we both recognized the guy who was our tournament director.
Yes.
And, but, you know, you come to Vegas, and then, you know, you see a lot of dealers you remember, and just trying to place them, and then we start talking to them. And I think it was you that said, hey, you were on the TV. He's like, yeah, I did all the Poker After Darks and blah, 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 and I did Celebrity Poker Showdown. And I'm like, that's where you were.
That's
it. And then we keep talking, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is the room where it was. I'm like, oh, my gosh!
Which explains the remnants of the Dennis Rodman play of the way I was playing. Because I think that somehow his crappy play was still lingering in that room and got into me somehow, because I had no chance in that tournament. I was being too social, and I can't play that way. And I tell you this all the time. I don't like to talk at that table. I just sit there. But it's hard, you know, all of our friends and fans and stuff were there, and you have to talk, so I was like, I'm not going to win this tournament, I'm just going to resign to having fun and talking, and I'll get it in bad, maybe I'll suck out, and of course, every time I got it into, I had like a billion outs on the turn, I would get it all in pre-flop, and on the turn, they'd have to dodge out of the deck, and they did, so I was like, oh my god, I want to get out of here, but yeah, they went out of their way, it was the Key West room, it's literally right next door. The poker room used to have two rooms, and they were split by a hallway that goes to the men's room, or I guess the restrooms. and they got rid of one of the rooms. They filled it with slots. Yeah, so it was just a 6-table room now. We didn't know that. So we thought it was going to be 12 tables. It was going to be plenty of room. So we really were nervous.
Yeah.
But the Key West room, they hooked it up, and they had a bunch of tournaments because they were having a tournament there tonight for the Deep Stacks and Annie Duke, Federer stuff, or their book signing.
Yeah.
So that's all going on there tonight. And luckily that was because we got to play it. And it was cool. We're all by ourselves.
Yeah, we had our own huge room.
Yep, our own cocktail waitress and stuff. Yeah. It was really cool. And the guys were kind of happy because they have no tournaments there, really, except for these little satellites they're trying to do. Special ones, but they were nice. They were happy to have a little tournament going on, and you know, a lot of the players, we had like 18 or 20 players in the tournament, a couple of rebuys, and then a few of them played cash games too, so I know we generated some business for them and got some good word of mouth, and you know, a lot of those players might go back to the Palms after experiencing it and seeing the staff and everything, so I felt like we did a good thing for them too. You know, it wasn't just one-sided for us, so it was a great time though. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the first the first guy I remember from the California meetup. All the way over from San Diego.
Yeah.
Great guy. I remember him there. And then the second guy that showed up was Steve, who came to the what we all like to call the ill-fated meetup of Caesars a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Where we didn't have a plan. We just said, hey, meet at Caesars. I'm sure we'll get a game going.
Yeah.
And like a handful of people showed up, and we just wandered around the strip forever, I think, and never got anything going. So it was good to see some folks we've seen before. We actually drew from, if you anybody's out there doubting the Annie of drawing power, it was 18 people.
Yep.
So, I mean, we were turning people away left and right because there's so many people here. But we also drew from Nevada, Georgia, Colorado, and California.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Oh, Florida, counting us.
Florida, counting us. So it was really cool.
And somebody came all the way from Atlanta.
From Atlanta.
Well, not just for the meetup.
No.
Yeah, it sounds better on the show to say he came all the way from Atlanta for the meetup.
He timed it so that, you know, the guy driving from San Diego, he timed it because we were going to be there on that time. So it was kind of cool. And, you know, also Jason Hawley from J-Design showed up, which is really good. Isn't he from Utah or something?
Yeah, it's right.
So
Utah.
Utah.
We add Utah to the notes here. Utah.
There you go, Utah. Put him on the notes. So, take two. Take two. We had guys from everywhere, including Utah.
Yeah, it was great about seeing. I always loved seeing Jason, and he brought some of those uncut sheets of J Design cards.
Yes.
He gave out his bounties, which is funny because he never got knocked out. He ended up being part of the chop at the end, and he knocked you out.
Knocked me out, and now
so he got his own bounty. So he
lugged
all these things to Vegas and then lugged them all the way back. But we got some great prizes from PMS Pokerware as well too. So the top people all got T-shirts as well too. But it came down to the chop, and it ended up being a local guy who I had on the rail.
Yeah.
When he moved to my table, he only had 2,000 put it in, and I think he sucked out on me, to be honest. And he ended up with the most chips, so he took the most money. And then our friend from Georgia took the second amount. And then the last three split the other one, and they're all Jason's posse. And they're all sitting like, all right, is that fair? Or are we getting the... Well, wait a minute. It's all the three of us.
Yeah, you're
so,
all buddies.
We're going to argue about this.
Something else, too, about... being there too was when I got knocked out early. I went and played cash games, and I forgot I had my little patch on from the NEO magazine. So as soon as you sit down, the guy in the 10 seats like, "Wait a minute, we got a sponsored pro sitting there," and I'm like, "Who? Where is he? I want to interview him for the show. You know, who is it?" He's like, "No, you." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm not a sponsored pro." And he's like, "Well, it says NEO magazine on your shirt." And I said, "Yeah, it doesn't mean anything, man. It's just because I work for the magazine." "Oh, okay." So I played against this guy, and he was a good player. He's one of those real aggressive players, like the straddle on the button and all that stuff. And got into a hand with him a couple of times. I actually had pocket aces like twice early on. I won both of them, and I showed them both times. And I told everybody, I only play aces. And so every time I showed the aces, they believed me. We had a lot of fun. So this time, he was in the straddle, and I looked down at ace-king suited. And I knew he was going to do his thing because there was a few limpers already. So I thought, why raise now and punish the straddler? I know he's going to do it, especially with the limpers. So I didn't do anything. I just limped. Two more limpers behind me, gets to him, and he makes it 50 to go. And I had like 200 in front of me at the time, maybe 220. And everybody folds, and it gets to me, and whew, ship it all in there. I want to see if he's going to actually call. And he thinks about it for a really long time. Really long time. He's put me through it, you know. But I was comfortable at that point. I knew I was ahead, you know. So he says, all right, takes the money he raised and puts it on my stack for me. And he's like, good hand, sir, nice play. And he starts going through all these scenarios, thinking on like 8 levels for me, you know. Would you really raise light there? And he's going through all this stuff. So I didn't show my hand. I pulled the stack back, heap mucks. And then finally the tournament ends, and Scott's like, hey, are we going to play these games and stuff? And I'm like, well, I'm already in a game, and I don't want to play a game I don't want to play, blah, blah, blah. And really, everybody just ended up leaving anyway. So I'm going to cash out. So I walk over to the guy, and as I'm leaving, I go back into the Key West room, which is connected, the door. I grab the door, I push it open, I lean back, and I go, hey, man, it was ace-king suited. And he goes, oh! And I said, I put you on like a small pair or just any kind of paint, and you were just squeezing. You're like, oh, man. She starts going through all the scenarios again. He's like, I had a pocket pair. I was ahead. I didn't think you would do that, but that's a great play. I don't know. Maybe that wasn't a good play. Maybe I should have called. So I'm like, all right, I'll see you later. I can't sit here and listen to you think it out. So you and I go in there. And a couple minutes later, as we're talking, he peeks his head through the door, and he's like, hey, I've been thinking about it. That really was a good play you made. And I'm like, hey, thanks, man. You know, whatever. So now you and I are getting ready to leave. And we got to go through the tournament area because we want to make sure we say goodbye to all the guys who were at the meetup who are not playing cash games. And as we go through, they started talking about us at the table. We didn't know it. And they had a copy of the magazine there, and they had it open to the publisher's page. And they're like, look, there they are. Those are the guys. And we're like, oh, no. You got to autograph the magazine. I'm like, no, we don't, dude. You don't want us to autograph. No, you really got it. You got to autograph the magazine. So we ended up autographing the magazine for these people. It was pretty funny. I mean, it felt good that they appreciated what we were doing and whatever and stuff. But really, I mean, it was a typical play. It wasn't any more than maybe level 2 or level 3. But he made it sound like it was this great move and everything. It made me feel real good, even though it really wasn't that really big of a deal. But it was a lot of fun, and the meetup was great, and I felt it was a success.
Yeah, always good to see our listeners. I always appreciate it. And some of our readers, too. I mean, Dan from Pokerati actually showed up to play one hand, actually.
Poor guy.
Yeah, you guys are late, and he was stacked off there. He had enough for one play, and he got all in with 7-6.
And he was dominated. 8-6 dominated him, and he lost. So I felt bad. We had a great conversation with him, though, in the parking lot, and he's doing some good things over at Pokerati, so we're happy for him. And we had a lot of other fun stuff happen on that trip, too. You know, of course, you guys all remember every time we're on a road trip, Delaware, or him driving right past the little thing where you put the money in for the toll and screeching and almost killing us. And this is no different. And, you know, it's funny, the first time we were here and we had the Twitter feed going or whatever it was, you know, Scott, I got into the car with him at the rental car and literally took less than 5 seconds for Scott to drop, like, every single possible. I mean, it was like he was the guy from New Britain or Great Britain or wherever he was from, dropping all the F-bombs. So it was no different here. Scott talks to the traffic like they can hear him, and he does it all day long. And then I think he's yelling at me, and I'm like, dude, I'm not saying anything. No, there's a guy in front of me. Move, drive. Okay, Grandpa. I mean, it's just crazy. And then finally, it was a little payback, I think, from Karma. We're driving down to the Nugget, and Scott, like, got off the wrong exit, or I don't know what he was doing, but we're driving. He's like, well, I could probably take this road here. And I was like, okay. So we're driving. He says, what the hell is this? And all of a sudden, we're driving in the bus lane. You're not supposed to be in this lane. And they're like, just move over, Scott. I can't. It's raised. And I'm like, it's not raised. It's a little mini curb there, but it's not that. You can move over. I can't move over. And all of a sudden, the bus is coming right at us. I think we're going to die. And he, you know, I love it that Scott knows Vegas inside and out, because I have no idea. I still can't get past the fact that downtown is in the north. You know, you think of down, you think of south. But, you know, that really is Vegas, and the Strip really isn't Vegas. Scott reminds me that it's like paradise. I don't really care. So I'm glad he knows all that, and I can just sit in the passenger seat. But, oh, my God, I age like 4 or 5 years every time I come out here and he drives. It just drives me crazy. We almost died really driving in the bus lane to go to the Nugget. It was crazy. Oh, my God. See, he's speechless. Well, he's in the car, he's got plenty to say, but he's speechless now when we're talking about driving. So this is what my hell is. And, oh, that's the other thing, too. Scott's like, we were in the parking garage, and he's like, this is my hell. When I die, I'm going to be stuck circling a parking garage with this lady in front of me. But one time, this lady was in front of us, and we're like, Scott's like, oh, wait, we'll take a shortcut here. And we cut through, and then we get caught behind somebody else, and then there's the lady again in front of us. Somehow, she morphed from the back of the parking garage in front of us again twice. I'm like, maybe we are in hell together, because it's hot enough to be hell here.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely crazy, but it's still a lot of fun stories coming from the driving, so.
I tried to start the trip off on trip down memory lane, because, you know, we got married at, my wife and I
got married. You, we got married at Sahara, really?
No, we got married somewhere else, probably here at the Imperial Palace. My wife and I got married at Sahara in, you know, clothes. And they're doing they're selling everything.
Yeah.
Anything and everything. And I was despondent because the initial story said it was only going to last for like 6 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to be out there in time. That sucks. I'm going out to Vegas. I'm not going to get there in time. So as I'm boarding the plane in Reno, I'm Facebooking with our ambassador, Las Vegas Mike. And he's like, hey, no, that sale's still going on. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
So I landed and made a beeline down there and tried to get some mementos from our wedding, you know, where we got married, the suite we stayed in. Nothing really worked out. But I got some more memories, and for those of you that are my Facebook friend, there's some stuff posted on there, so I'm not going to bore you on the show with it. But Las Vegas Michael went back later, and didn't give me exactly what I wanted, but it got me the next best thing, and so it's great to have friends here that, yeah. That can help you out, and just really sad to see a big... sad and happy to see a sale of, you know, Landmark. It's sad that it's gone, but it was nice to get one more time to walk through. And, you know, it's, as Las Vegas Michael was saying, it's really cool. You see parts of the hotel that you weren't allowed to see before. You're walking in the count room and and things like that. And so it was kind of cool to actually walk through it in a lifeless form and see a bunch of scavengers, you know, trying to pick things up.
I was like, Scott, just take that sign right there. Let's go. Let's get out of here. No, it's going to have Sierra on it. And I'm like, all right, Mr. Romantic, you know. So, and I was like, really appreciating Scott's naivete, too, because, you know, I mean, for the most part, you know, I always say to Scott, what's this? And he tells me what things are going on. He knows most of the shit. So I don't know. I shouldn't have said that on the show, but I don't care. But one of the things was like, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna buy these chairs. They're like slot chairs, and I'm going to ship them. And I'm like, Scott, you realize it's going to be like $300 or $400? No, it doesn't weigh that much. It's not that heavy. I said, Scott, it's going to be like $300 or $400, man. You're not going to want to do that. You're going to buy these chairs. So it was great when he called up the shipping place, and they're like, yeah, it's going to be about $400. Scott's like, damn. So he didn't do it. So that made me feel pretty good. At least I knew that he could not ship these chairs for under $400. So he ended up not doing it. He got a nice little, something a little more reasonable, too, you know. So yeah.
Thanks to Las Vegas Mike for that. And we also got some great meals.
Yes, we did. We got some nice meals.
Some interesting meals.
Yeah. Well, we got to go out to dinner with the manager at Santa Fe. Great guy, young guy, a lot of great ideas, a lot of energy. You know, it made me feel real well talking to him.
Yeah.
He's just so smart and just got so much energy. And he buys his dinner. And Scott says, you know, usually my wife is here and she tells me what wine to order, so I don't know what to get. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know anything about wine. So the guy said, oh, you got to have this wine. So he tells Scott. Scott's like, all right, cool. So they come out with a little mini carafe, right, or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not some kind of wine connoisseur. This is why I need my wife with me, all right? They brought me out. I just ordered a glass of wine. I didn't order, like, the whole vineyard, right? So they bring out the glass of wine and then a little tiny mini carafe.
Yeah, a little mini carafe.
To fill it up. Now, I'm sure it has something to do with how much you're supposed to put in a glass at one time. BS. All right. My wife and I have been known to slug down our own individual bottles of Boone's at home. So I don't care how much wine I put in the bottle. I'm not trying to impress anyone. And it ended up coming back to bite me.
Yeah.
There's too many obstacles on the table, and I'm not used to that kind of pressure when I'm eating.
It was like literally 7 seconds into our meetup with this guy. Brand new, you know, relationship we're trying to build here. Scott spills the entire red wine. And if it was white wine, it wouldn't even have been that bad, because you wouldn't even seen it on the white tablecloth. But it was an entire glass of very expensive red wine all over the white sheet. I'm like, and this guy's driving, I said to him. I said, please excuse my partner. He's probably had a few already today, you know. And it was fun, didn't mind. But yeah, they put a towel on the table. And the whole night was a reminder that there's this stinky grape smell next to me. And I'm, you know, everybody knows I don't drink. So I got to sit here and smell this wine. You know, and then but they were nice. They brought him back another
one. They brought me a free one.
So. They're like, yeah, we know this guy's not a venophile, that's for sure. He's just some drunk who's getting lucky, you know. But it was pretty funny. How embarrassing, Scott. You know, big, important meeting, and Scott spills a huge glass of wine. But he's human, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I love was we had some great sponsors, and one of our best is Carrie and Monica from Blue Shark. Optics, you know, the great glasses.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And, you know, some of these sponsors, what I really like is they cross over from sponsors to friends. And I've spent a lot of time with the two of them. You know, they hang out with us when they come to Tampa. You know, when I go down to Fort Lauderdale where they live, they take me out.
Plus, they're at a lot of the stops that we go to, because they always have booths and stuff, around. So we see them a lot.
And he freaking drives everywhere. He drove out here from Florida.
You know, he does not want to fly. It's hilarious.
Oh, because he doesn't want to go through the security. Yeah, the hassle of the security. It's a lot easier to spend 14 hours in a car. I love him, Kerry. But then, you know, last time I went down to Fort Lauderdale, they are like, hey, we're going to take you out. You like Chinese? I'm like, I love Chinese.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take you out. And his wife, Monica, is from born in Hong Kong.
Yes.
So they took me to this, like, real authentic Chinese restaurant. I've never been there. I mean, I've been to all the Joe's Super Buffets in town and the Wok and Rolls.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to them because I like them, but this was like a real Chinese restaurant where I'm looking around and everybody's Chinese.
Yeah.
And the best part of it was that Monica ordered for us in Cantonese.
Yes.
Which was amazing. And all this great food came and, you know, served family style. It was almost like your mini buffet there. I really enjoyed that that kind of the style of dining and style. The whole fun. Yeah, so when we were talking before we came out, I'm like, hey, you guys know any good Chinese places in Vegas? And started laughing. About 12.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, well, when we're out there, you know, the four of us are going to have to go out and you're going to have to show me, and you got the ordering candy, do the show for Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
So they took us over to Ping Pang Pong, Pong, Bing Bong, Ping Pang Pong over at the Gold Coast, which apparently has been the best Chinese restaurant in town for like
3-4 years.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine who got fired that one year that they, they didn't get it. But great place. Yeah, and we sit down, and Monica does all the ordering, and you were just like hanging on your feet, listening to her do it. And beforehand, she asked us what we liked, and of course, you know, we both like, yeah, well, whatever you want. And I think you said something like, nothing too spicy, but that was about it.
Yeah, that was about it.
And so she orders, and we had no idea what she ordered, because we don't speak Cantonese.
Well, we used to. We don't anymore. Yeah. we've sort of forgotten as we live in America. But yeah, exactly.
And you know, in Cantonese, too, there's no, I mean, at least, like, you know, maybe Spanish or French or it's Italian. Cognitive. I might be able to,
some
like,
words in there.
Maybe sort of get a clue, but no, I had absolutely nothing. So, right. So they're like, so they start laughing to each other, Carrie, and like... And we're like, oh, no, whatever you order, we're going to eat it. This is exciting.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you're going to eat almost everything. We're like, really? So they bring up the appetizer, the big bowl, pop it down thing, and there appears to be, like, chicken feet sticking out of this bowl. it turns out it was chicken feet sticking out of the bowl, and there wasn't anything else. It wasn't like there was a salad underneath it. It was just, like, 4 chicken feet.
I have to admit, when it came out, I didn't know you ordered that, and I thought it was like some sort of breaded dish. Like the food was like, I don't know, it could have been like shrimp that was breaded or you know, cooked it and then cut a different way. I didn't know idea that it was chicken feet. For like the first 15 minutes that they sat there in front of me, I didn't know what they were. And then he pulled them out one at a time with the chopsticks, and I'm like, wow, those are chicken feet, you know? And so he's like, you guys aren't going to eat this. And I'm like, you know, I'll try anything once. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not Survivor. I'm not going to eat, you know, with balutes, those things. But I'll try one. So put it in front of us, and I ate more than you did.
Yes, you did.
I think it was just because I wanted to be more than you did, not because I enjoyed it.
I was culturally challenged. Yeah. I think what's funny is we had 3 distinct eating styles of chicken wings. And what I thought was hilarious is Monica doesn't like this.
Yeah.
Won't cook it, just doesn't get it. Carrie loves them. He was introduced to them by the fans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At that place, and loves them. And he just grabbed a chicken foot, put it in his mouth, and just, like, ripped it out. All these bones come out of his mouth, and he's just fat and happy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
And then you, you've mastered the, you Renaissance man, mastered the art of the chopstick.
Yeah.
So you were able to, the chopsticks actually helped extract more of the part of the feet that you're supposed to eat off easier. Me, I'm an ugly, boorish American who's never learned to use chopsticks, so all I had was a fork. I didn't give a knife. So here I am trying to scrape this bone to get the skin off. And I'm doing the best I can, and I eat a little bit, and then I didn't want to ask for a knife, because, you know, I already look like I'm an idiot there, not using the chopsticks, and I didn't want to, like, you know, hey, the training wheels you gave me aren't good enough, I need, like, training wheels in the front, too, please. And so it just made it really hard to eat, and it was kind of my convenient excuse. And it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, here's the thing, is, you know, first of all, you have to get past the fact that you're chewing on the digits of vowel.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God. And then you have to pull out the little segments of digits out of your mouth. So you literally have to try to get past that. And then the texture wasn't that bad, but there was some sort of spice or something in there. I mean, you can taste the ground that the chicken walked on. And so it was kind of like, all right, I'm eating as much as I can, and I just got to eat more than Scott so I can just laugh at him. But really, I did not want to eat any more of it than I had to. And if it was different, if it had like a glaze on it or a sweet and sour sauce or something like that, I probably could have eaten it. But there was something in it that I don't know what the flavor was, but there was something that I couldn't get past. So I ate about 2/3 of it, and then after that, I was like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, I posted on Facebook how exciting it was that I ate chicken foot the night before, and then Monica came back and corrected me on Facebook. You ate a chicken toast.
Yeah, you didn't eat chicken foot. Oh, but the other food was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Forget about great, that. Great,
the shrimp
great.
And the pork, and everything was really, really good. And like you said, it was cool to have authentic Chinese, you know, an authentic person ordering it for us, and it was really cool. It was really a lot of fun. And it was their 10-year anniversary, which I thought was really interesting. that they took us out on their night like that, and I had a lot of fun, a lot of respect for them.
Kind of, you know, commits us to the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, that's what I said to him. I said, 20th anniversary, I'll finish the foot. I promise, the chicken foot. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I didn't know, you know, my wife's probably upset at me because I didn't know that the gift for 10-year anniversary is chicken feet.
Let's see, it's paper for the first year is wood. Yeah, I think it is chicken feet.
Chicken feet, yeah. I totally missed that, so going to have a... I got to pay a white tax when I get home.
Oh, but it was a great trip, man. I'm really sad to see it end, but I'm also happy to get home and put my nose to the grindstone and get this magazine out for the next issue because we're real excited. Everybody's really embracing the magazine out here, and I want to get them the next copy. So it was cool to see the new issue show up too while we were here,
right?
So people could talk to us about it and stuff. So we had a lot of fun.
So yeah, so look forward to that the September issue. It's going to be real exciting because it's going to have like something unique from every room.
Yeah, pretty much something unique.
Which I think is a unique way of doing a unique story about the uniquely Vegas.
The uniquely Vegas.
Yes. And remember, we got a couple more shows coming up, the TDA, which is going to be really interesting. We talked to some folks there, and they said some groundbreaking stuff was happening.
Yeah.
At that, which is important for your tournaments, and then these great interviews you did. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
and And telling people about Reno and Laughlin, too. Two other places that probably don't get as much attention.
Yeah. So we didn't spend a lot of time at the World Series, but we still got a lot of good stories and a lot of good shows coming out of it. So stay tuned. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.